I think it's a good time to get started. Thank you everyone for joining this lecture. It's my immense pleasure to be your lecturer for the machine learning for many-body physics course. I should warn you that this is my first time teaching this course, so just bear with me if there are any mistakes or any hassles. Feel free to ask questions throughout the lectures. Okay? And one thing I wanted to highlight is that feel free to stop me at any time during the lectures, and you're actually encouraged to do that. And before diving deeper into the content of this course, I wanted to highlight a few things about the course. So your teaching assistant will be Skyler, who is a PhD student at the University of Waterloo and also at the Perimeter Quantum Intelligence Lab, or the PICL. So feel free to ask her any questions by email, or feel free also to drop by my office if you have any questions throughout the course. And you're also encouraged to see this document after the portal will be visible, hopefully today. So this course outline will contain all the necessary information and also all the prerequisites that you need to pass this course. Something else that you can check out in the portal is the schedule. So here you can find all the details, information about the time of the lectures and the tutorials, and also about the office hours. So the goal of these office hours is to encourage you to ask questions if something is not clear in the lectures. So you will find the time over here. And those will be, I thought maybe we could do them on the second floor bistro because the timer will be occupied by other lectures at that time, okay? And at any time during the lecture, during this course, feel free to send me any feedback if you want to get more improvements. Your feedback will be very welcome. Other things that will be also, I thought would be helpful is the references. So those are some references that I'll be using throughout these lectures. So in case you want to read more, feel free to go here on the portal and to read more about these references. And during this course, you'll be also provided with lecture notes. So I hope these lecture notes will be helpful to help you to expand over your knowledge if you want to learn more. And also, in case you didn't manage to make it to a lecture, I hope these notes will help you to catch up in case you didn't make it to a lecture. And also, your feedback on these notes will be very welcome because this is my first time writing these notes. So in case there are comments for improvement, I'll be happy to hear from you. And something I thought would be helpful to add to this course is quizzes. So based on the feedback I received from you on the form I sent to you, I think maybe the ideal way of doing it is through the tutorials, not at the end of the lectures. So at the beginning of each tutorial, we will do a quiz just to make sure that you have understood all the concepts we learned in class. And that will give you an opportunity to ask questions if something is not clear, okay? And something else I wanted to highlight is that in addition to the two homeworks that we will have in this course, we will also have a presentation at the end of this course on May 2nd. So this will be about a 5-minute presentation, nothing technical. It's just about exploring your interests at the intersection of machine learning in many-body physics. Of course, I know that it's expected to have that you only accomplish two homeworks for this course. So what I can do is reduce one of the workload on you for the two homeworks so that it's kind of balanced. And if you feel that it's too much for you, please reach out to me so that I can work out other alternatives for you, okay? So just wanted to open the floor if there are any questions about this part. Yeah?
I didn't receive your email.
Oh, you didn't get my email. Okay.
Just, you know.
Yeah, so maybe I should, yeah. Thank you for letting me know. I'll make a note of that. Yeah.
I can contact you afterwards if you want.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. Sure, okay, cool. And so one thing I wanted to highlight for the presentation is that the deadline for giving me a topic that you're interested in. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, you can go.
Yeah, so just for the deadline, it's going to be the week after before your presentation. So if you can send me a title for your presentation, that will be appreciated. And again, if you're not able to make it, just let me know so that I can provide you with other alternatives. For instance, adding a question in the homework or or add in some sort of a backup plan for your presentation, okay?
Freeform or PowerPoint or?
Yeah, so you can do PowerPoint.
What are you expecting in the way of sort of?
Yeah, just like your favorite software for presentations, like just nothing technical, just 5-minute presentation, and then that will be followed with one or two questions. So you'll be the lecturers for me on that session, okay? Yeah, go ahead.
At the intersection of machine learning and many body physics, or machine learning and physics as well?
Well, if you didn't manage to find something in many body physics, feel free to do something other, like that's also connected to physics in cosmology or in gravity. Like, feel free to expand if you're interested, if that's something that interests you. Yeah. Okay. Are there any other questions? Okay. Next. Okay, so that's basically what I wanted to highlight in terms of the coursework and the requirements and the presentation. So at any point during the course, if you need more like clarifications, feel free to reach out. And I think now it's a good time to get started with the motivation for this course. So I thought maybe one good motivation for like highlighting the importance of machine learning is by Googling like machine learning in Google Trends. So as you can see on this plot here, this is the interest over time for the term machine learning. And as you can see, it's kind of growth over the last few years. And you might be wondering why it got started over here in 2012. So before that, I wanted first to highlight one of the things that happened before that in the growth of interest, which is the AI winter, which is where which is an era of in the 20th century where machine learning was not actually very popular, and that endured like a period of winter where people were a bit skeptical about the future of that field. So specifically in that book called Perceptrons, the researchers who wrote the book were a bit skeptical about one architecture called the perceptron, which we'll learn about in this course. So they were a bit skeptical, and this kind of endured a lot of skepticism about this area of research. This is just to teach you a lesson that you should not like always follow the skepticism that you would hear in the media or in the research community. So one thing that kind of sparked this interest was in 2012, where this paper, which now has over 150K citations. So what this paper did is an image classification task where they managed to win the competition over all other algorithms that were developed by computer scientists. So what this competition is about, it's about classifying images in a class of 1,000 categories. So for each picture, the algorithm has to specify the correct category. And this machine learning algorithm based on convolutional neural networks that we will learn about in this course managed to beat all the other algorithms by a large margin. So this kind of a lot of people say that this paper is kind of the event where machine learning has kind of sparked more interest in the research community. And this was not the only thing that happened. And also about 8 years ago, there was AlphaGo, which you might also have heard about, where a machine learning algorithm have managed to beat the world champion in the game of Go. So Lee Sedol was beaten by AlphaGo by 4-1. And if you want to learn more about this, there is this documentary called AlphaGo, if you want to learn more about this. So this was something that was not trivial at that time, and it sparked a lot of interest as well. There's also the ability of machine learning to do self-driving cars, although it's not perfect nowadays. There's a lot of important issues and also ethical issues about that. But this paper has kind of sparked the interest in this area of research, that it's possible for cars to do self-driving. And that paper in the abstract, they say that with minimum training data from human from humans, cars can drive to in traffic on local roads and also on highways. So that's something that was not actually non-trivial at that time, and it's really was something really amazing. Something amazing I thought would be good to share about machine learning is its ability to advance other areas of science, namely in medicine. So in this paper, researchers have developed an architecture called ChessNet, which is based on neural networks that we will learn about in this course. So here they found that ChessNet exceeds average radiologist performance on the one of their metrics on detecting pneumonia disease. So this is something that's also was really impressive at that time. And something else that also we use nowadays is language translation in Google, for instance, in Google Translate. So in 2016, Google started to use Google neural networks and neural-based tools for Google Translation. In that graph here, you see that in the red bars, you see that the Google machine learning translation as opposed to the previous approach, which is the one in blue here. So as you see in for the number 6 means perfect a score of perfect translation. So you see here that the number of times where machine translation on Google did a perfect translation is actually better than the one using the traditional way of doing translation. And it's actually equal or comparable to the human level translation, which is the one on orange over here. So this was in 2016, and you might be wondering that this has actually got much better. And in 2016, this made the headlines in the New York Times. And currently, I think most of you are using ChatGPT, which is an advanced version of these tools. So just to illustrate this for you, maybe you're already familiar with these kind of impressive results. So if I tell ChatGPT to explain machine learning in one paragraph for a 5-year-old kid, I got this amazing explanation, which I would reliably give to a 5-year-old. So if you want, I could give you 1 minute to read it. It's really impressive. Okay. And so this got even more impressive with GPT-4, which is an advanced version of ChatGPT, where GPT-4 can exhibit human level performance on various professional and academic tasks. So just to give you an illustration, I did a simple test on ChatGPT on GPT 3.5, which was launched, which is freely available if you want to test it, and which also have the possibility of uploading images, not only sending text prompts. So what I tried to do is to ask ChatGPT to convert my handwritten notes for one of the lectures I did in a couple of years ago to LaTeX notes, which is a non-trivial task, and that would take some amount of time. So what I did is I uploaded this picture, and I asked, can you convert the following handwritten notes to LaTeX? And after taking the code and compiling it, I got this impressive result, which I'm sure would have saved me a lot of time if that feature was available like a long time ago. So this is actually very impressive, although there are some, it's not perfect yet. So for instance, here in this part where I have psi lambda, that was not something that was properly translated. But although that's something I could fix by hand very easily. So the global structure was something that was ensured during the conversion. And that's something that could save me a lot of time without having to do it one line by one by the other. So I just thought that would be great to highlight this impressive application of these tools. Something impressive you could do with tools is generating images out of a text prompt. So this is something you can try by going to labs.openai.com. So there's this technology called DALL-E, which is also based on tools that are similar to ChatGPT. So here I ask DALL-E to generate a 3D realistic render of an astronaut walking on Mars. So I got this amazing picture. You can also try that by your own if you want. Here I ask DALL-E to generate a pencil and watercolor drawing of a bright city in the future with flying cars. So you can see that it does that very well. So here you can see that it does the drawing with the pencil and watercolor. And there are cars, and maybe like here it's a flying car, who knows? So you know, like that's something that was impressive, and it kind of imagined this situation, although this is something that didn't exist before. So it's, these tools have also the power to generalize to situations that that are novel. You can also imagine other things that do not exist in principle. So you have a hand palm with a tree growing on top of it. So by giving this prompt, you can generate something that's, well, that does what you want to do, but it's not something that does not exist in principle. Something I thought would be great to highlight is the possibility of these tools to be a virtual artist. So you can generate symphony or classical music using these tools. So I thought it would be good to share this sample with you. So that's really amazing, isn't it? So that's was all like done by artificial intelligence and neural networks based tools. Something impressive that I thought would be good to share as well is this tool called Alpha Geometry, which was published recently in Nature, which allows to solve Olympiad geometry problems. So this is something I have personal experience with, and those kind of problems are very tough. And it's very hard, and you need a lot of years of training, like, to be able to solve these kind of problems. In this paper, they show that you can use neural networks to solve these problems. For instance, at the Olympiad level, where you have these complicated questions. For instance, here you need to show that these circles are tangent to each other, and you need to use a lot of other sophisticated thinking techniques or logic techniques in order to show these kind of statements. And in this paper, they show that this neural-based approach can solve these questions, which is really something that's non-trivial and really impressive nowadays. So now I want to switch gears to other applications in physics. So it turns out that these tools are also applicable, for instance, in the field of astronomy, if you want to classify galaxies. So there are, for instance, two types of galaxies, spiral and elliptical. And it turns out that these tools are very good at doing the classification. You can also use these tools to do gravitational waves detection. So for instance, in this paper, they kind of use convolutional neural networks, which we'll learn about, to help with the gravitational waves detection. And it turns out that these tools are also helpful for the discovery of physical laws. So there's this paper where they developed a neural network approach called AI Feynman. So what they did here is they applied it to 100 equations from the Feynman lectures on physics, which most of you all know. And they basically say that they discover all of them. So in principle, one example is that they managed to find the energy of a particle in special relativity, which is something that's really non-trivial, at least for me. And something that was also interesting was the ability of these tools to discover new physics. So for instance, in this lab, they basically discover different experiments, quantum experiments in the field of quantum optics. And they even took it a step further into to predict the future of research, of future of research trends. So for instance, in this paper, they used a large amount of scientific papers and knowledge from books and Wikipedia to train these architectures. And they basically discovered that these tools can suggest inspiring and personalized out-of-the-box ideas. So, and they predict that these kind of tools can play a very important role into accelerating the future of scientific progress. So of course, don't be afraid that these tools will not be able to replace scientists, but they will be able to help scientists to do more discovery in the future. They're also helpful in particle physics, for instance, and at CERN. And in this course, we'll learn about the application of machine learning in many body physics, for instance, in quantum matter, which you can learn more about in this review. And now this brings me to the question. So all I've done so far is to motivate you about the term machine learning and about all the amazing applications. Now I wanted to direct the question to you regarding the definition of machine learning. So what do you think is machine learning? Can anyone provide me with an idea about what they think about machine learning? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I can say machine learning is like training a machine or computers with a set of data.
Exactly, yeah. So that's one way of doing machine learning, and that's something we will learn about. It's called supervised learning. And if you want to define that generically, it's a field where basically we give an ability of computers to learn. So either using data or without using data. And that's something we will see in this course. And the main thing is that we need to do that without explicitly programming the computers. So we do that without having to provide a specific set of commands in order to write our program. And in this reference, which was written by physicists, they define machine learning as about finding regularities in data and making use of them and for fun and also for profit. So this is, if you want, a physicist definition of machine learning. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so if I understand, the idea is just like to train the computer with data without like writing any algorithm that will enable the computer to like enhance his way of seeing stuff. So like it just learn by itself.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So either it learns from data as you highlighted, or it learns from experience or interaction with the environment. So the idea is that we do not have to program the computer explicitly with specific commands.
So does it mean that you have like a sort of conscience or something like that?
So can you say it again, like conditions?
Does it mean that the computer will like kind of self-learn what it's doing?
Yeah, so in somehow, like the goal is that we want to, if you want to achieve a task to classify, for instance, between pictures of cats and dogs, like by just providing data, we hope that the computer will be able to do the classification by itself on some new data. So without having to program it or do some sort of complicated conditions, if the cat is like rotated like this or like that, you know, these kind of programming is very complicated to do. And machine learning solves a lot of these complicated questions. Yeah. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Okay.
Maybe one more.
Yeah.
How machine learning is different from statistical learning then?
Yeah, so statistical learning has some overlap with machine learning. Statistical learning, there are other tools that's a great question. Like maybe if, I'm not very familiar with statistical learning, but what I know is that machine learning uses tools from statistical learning to be able to achieve the task it does. So you can say that statistical learning is one blob and machine learning is one blob and the kind of overlap. Of course, like I should like warn you that I need to learn more about this. Like if you want, I could check that out.
It's confusing for me as well.
Yeah, but maybe one thing that would clarify the confusion is this slide here. So where I wanted to make an important remark is that machine learning is not the same as artificial intelligence. So So machine learning is actually a subfield of artificial intelligence, where the goal of artificial intelligence is to make, is the goal of making computers mimic the intelligent human behavior. And, but machine learning is about making computers programmed to learn without being explicitly programmed. Okay. And in this course, we'll specifically focus on neural networks and some architectures in the theory of deep learning. So all these terms will be clear, hopefully cleared out by as we go throughout the course, okay? So let's get started. So now I'm gonna move to the blackboards, but in case you have any questions, please feel free to ask. Yeah.
Have we reached the point where we are satisfying the Turing test?
No, I don't think so. So we're like, that's like the AI, I guess that's the AI level. And I think that's still
it's
ongoing.
You can't tell when you're talking to a computer or a human being.
Yeah, I think that's still like, not far away, but it's still, that was not something that's not reached yet. And I believe some researchers are suggesting that we need to include the concept of causality to be able to reach that. And that's an ongoing research right now. Yeah, but does that answer the question? Okay. Okay, so now let's move on to the black part. Now, the first thing I wanted to highlight is the relationship between machine learning and many-body physics. Okay, so, of course, those are two fields that feels like they are separate, but there's actually some relationship that will help us to explore applications of machine learning in many-body physics. So, just to remind you, the goal of many-body physics is about explaining and predicting the macroscopic phenomena. For instance, high temperature superconductivity, or just, for instance, ferromagnetism or paramagnetism, any feature that you see on a macroscopic scale, and based on microscopic quantities. For instance, starting from the microscopic laws that we know in nature. So in here, we will denote these macroscopic phenomena as features or labels. So I'm going to explain why we do that. And those microscopic quantities, we'll denote them as data, okay? And this, so this analogy makes it clear that we can actually use machine learning methods to study many-body physics, because the goal of machine learning is about learning, making computers learn about a feature starting from some data. So for instance, we can use machine learning to learn about macroscopic properties, for instance, phases of matter, either a ferromagnetic material or a paramagnetic material, starting from the data, for instance, the spin configurations that we have in a material, okay? So that's the analogy that we will make use of, okay? And the reason why we do this is because many-body physics is something that's very hard to study in general. Of course, there are already like a lot of theory that was done before for solving many-body physics. So for instance, in if we have like a phenomenon where we can already like have a simple theoretical description, we don't need to use any machine learning. These kind of descriptions are helpful when we don't know what's the physics. And that's the goal of this area of research, is to discover some new physics starting from some data. In general, okay? So there are also other computational techniques like Monte Carlo. You might have heard of Monte Carlo, tensor networks, exact diagonalization. And machine learning is hopefully like one complementary approach that would help us to solve questions in physics. So that's the aim of these tools. And that's the bigger picture, is to help us uncover new mysteries in many-body physics, okay? Yeah.
How many bodies supposed to be in a system to be many-body physics?
Yeah, as I think, so maybe I could give an example here. Let's say we're dealing with a system of spins where we have n spins, where each spin can be either up or down. So let's say we have n spins, which can be either up or down. So we have, in total, so here two possibilities, and in total we have 2 to the n possibilities. So I think if you take n to be at the scale of hundreds of spins, that's something that the scale of the number of atoms in our universe. So
yeah.
So you can see that for a relatively small number of spins, for instance, that's very small compared to the Avogadro number, which is 10 to the 23. That's something, the number of possibilities is very large.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that many bodies is actually something that's still very small compared to the scale that we have in the real world.
Yeah. Okay. In case you have like four bodies.
Yeah, in case you only have
like many body physics, or is it supposed to be like some?
I think that field is called few body physics. Like, yeah, like maybe you'll hear this term in particle physics.
Yeah, so where is the border between?
Yeah, I think the transition between the two comes when you have something that's really intractable to do with exact techniques. This is when you need to use new tools to solve these problems. For instance, machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So if this analogy is clear for you, now I'm gonna explain to you the different categories of machine learning algorithms that we will explore in this course. So the first category is called supervised learning. Or simply SL. So the idea is that if you're given a data set, which we'll denote as the follows, so we will have some configuration and some label. So we have a set of tuples, X and Y, and the number of data points is dependent on from one application to the other. And this X is called a data point, where each data point is a tuple of numbers, x1, x2, until xn. So for instance, x1 could be one spin in the physical application, or in other applications that could be one pixel in an image, okay? And labels, so this could be either a number or a vector as well. So let's do the generic version when we have so let me denote this as dx and here dy. So dx is the dimensionality of each data point and dy is the dimensionality of each label. And generically, that's just a number. But to make it general, like you could also have cases where the label is multidimensional, okay? And the goal is to fit, so the task is to fit some function f of x to the labels. Okay? So we want to find that function in such a way that f of x is as close as possible to the labels, okay? And examples of this could be in regression or classification. So in regression, this is the case when the labels are continuous. So let's say you want to have a set of data points and you want to fit through them, that's the case when you have labels that are continuous. And the case of classification is when you have labels that are discrete. For instance, if you have two phases of matter, ferromagnetism and paramagnetism, you have two labels, either, for instance, 0 or 1. So this is when the y's are discrete. Okay. So far, so good. Have any questions? Yeah.
So a y is the label and x is the just the data?
Yeah, just one data point. Yeah. And this is the label. And both of them will form the data. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay. Just one thing to highlight here is that everything here will be on the lecture notes. So if you want, like, if you don't want to take like notes, that like you can just follow with me. But you're free to do. Like, if you feel like taking notes is helpful, like, feel free to do that. Okay. So now, after defining supervised learning, there is also another area of machine learning called unsupervised learning. And this is the case when we don't have access to labels. So in that case, we're given a data set without labels. We only have data points x. And those are unlabeled data points. And the task here is to extract some meaningful features from the data set that represent some probability distribution of the data that's given by these data points, OK? Is to get or meaningful features. The data set. So for instance, like we could have a data set of pictures or of people who are smiling and not smiling without having access to the labels. So these kind of unsupervised learning algorithms can help us to distinguish between the two classes of people, smiling and not smiling, without having access to labels. So we'll see more about that in the context of many body physics applications where we could separate phases of matter without having necessarily access to labels of the phases. Okay. And the last one is reinforcement learning. So that part will not be covered in this course, but if you're interested, feel free to ask me questions about that or to do a presentation about this if you're interested. And the common abbreviation of this is the RL. And the task is to, given some environment, like let's say you have a robot and you have an environment, you want to make the robot learn to discover the environment without any human interaction, okay? So given an environment, so we want to take an action so that our certain reward function is maximized. So for instance, when you're playing a game, you want to have as much score as possible. The same thing applies here. We want to maximize a certain reward. Okay. So far, so good. You have any questions so far? Yeah, please.
How do you define the environment?
Yeah, can you say that again?
How do you define the environment in the reinforced learning?
Yeah, so that's a tricky part. It's actually something that specific to that field. Like, I won't go into details, but it's basically like the analogy here is that if you have, like, let's say again, a robot in this room, the environment is all the objects that over here in this room. For instance, the chairs, the blackboards, all the things that are inside the room. So that's the analogy here. In other contexts, for instance, like let's say we want to do this for applications in physics. Let's say we want to put gates in a quantum computer in such a way that we want to maximize, for instance, the overlap with a certain quantum state. Then the game we want to play with gates is that the environment is basically the quantum computer in the structure of the quantum computer. So the environment can have different definitions depending on your application. Does that answer your question?
It is somewhat similar to supervised learning, maybe. I don't know, because we have a lot of data points in this case than supervised learning, and the reward in this case would be like the cost function, where we are maximizing the reward, but we are minimizing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so but one thing I want to highlight here is that for supervised learning, we already have access to data. But for reinforcement learning, we don't have data points, but it's actually the exploration we make in the environment that gives us some sort of data that we didn't have access to before. So the explorations and the failures are actually, using this reward is kind of what makes a certain agent learns in this framework. Does that answer your question? Okay. So as a tentative outline for this course, in the first few lectures, maybe seven or so lectures, we'll learn about supervised learning. And then in the other part of the course, we'll learn about unsupervised learning. So that will be lectures 8 to 11, roughly speaking. And then we'll also have a chance to learn about quantum machine learning. So we'll have a guest speaker, Damien from the outreach team, who will share his expertise on quantum machine learning. So this is using quantum computers to do machine learning. So that would be lecture 12. And at the end, that will be your presentations. So at the end, I wanted to share a few examples for supervised learning just to give you an idea to illustrate these kind of concepts more clearly. But before doing that, are there any questions? Okay, so first, yeah.
You've categorized these as three separate areas, but is there any synergy whereby you could combine them all and get more effective results by using all three?
Yeah, I think people are actually doing that in here at Perimeter. So for instance, some researchers are actually using kind of both supervised learning and approach similar to reinforcement learning to better get better results. I think a synergy between the different approach is definitely helpful. But in this course, we'll learn about them separately. I think the synergy is something that's done more into like research areas. Okay. Any other question? Okay, cool. So now let's do some examples of supervised learning. So that you can connect more with the definition provided over there. Okay, so supervised learning examples. So the first example is 1D regression. So let me explain what this means. So let's say we're given a set of data points, x, where here x is a data point. So we're given a data point x and y, so where x is just a number, not a vector, and y is also a continuous number. So if you were to represent this data set into the xy plane, we will have data points here, like that. So this is just an example. And the goal is to fit some function so that it goes through the data points in the most effective way. And one example of one fit we could do is the following line. Okay, so this fit is reasonable, and we'll learn how to make these kind of fits without having to have examples where we have something that's overfitting or have a lot of noise. So we'll learn about how we can do that more effectively in this course. Okay. Another example is handwritten digits classifiers. So this is so we're given, again, a data set where x are vectors now and y are just numbers. So x would correspond to an image of handwritten digits. And y would be the corresponding number. So for instance, we could have x equal to a picture like this, where we have, for instance, number 3. Maybe not this one. So you could have an image like this, and the label is equal to 3. You could also have another image like this, or this, where we have, for instance, 7 written in 2 different ways. So we could write 7 this way, or this way. And for both of these images, we should have the same label, y equal to 7. Okay. And the goal is to train a computer. To determine the labels of some new handwritten digits that were not seen before in the data. Okay. So this is one example. Another example we wanted to highlight is more related to many-body physics, which is the case of the so-called Ising model. So the third example is related to Eisen model. So as you might have seen before, the Hamiltonian of this model is given by the following, where we have interactions between nearest neighbors. And for instance, here we have ferromagnetic interactions that encourages spins to align either to the same direction, either up or both down, okay? So the spins could be either up or down. For instance, either minus one or one. And again here, this sum is a sum over all nearest neighbors. For instance, if we have a 2D lattice, in each node here we have a spin, and basically we consider all the nearest neighbors interactions, and so all these vertices will appear on this sum over here. Okay. So the idea here is to consider an Eisen phase classifier. So you know that in two dimensions for the classical Eisen model, there is a phase transition at the critical temperature. So in 2D, there is a phase transition at this critical temperature, which is roughly 2.269. So if we were to represent the phases, so below the critical temperature, we have the so-called ferromagnetic phase. Or simply Fm. And on the other side, we have, on the high temperature regime, we have the paramagnetic phase, which is more disordered. Okay, so if you're not, here simply it's also called PM. So if you're not familiar with these kind of, with this physics, if you have not done this before, feel free to reach out to me and I can explain this to you after, okay? So the goal is to classify these phases. And to do that, we can assume that we're given some data sets. D. Again, here we have the data points and the labels. And each data point is a spin configuration. So we could have a tuple of S1, S2, until Sn, where n is the number of spins in this lattice, for instance. And S1 could be either up or down, as I've highlighted over here. Okay, so this would be the one data point, and Y would be the label. So this could be either Fm or Pm. Of course, it's hard to represent that into, it's easier if we represent these as numbers. So Fm would be, for instance, 0, and Pm would be number 1. Okay, so it's kind of the similar to ASCII 100 in digits. Here, it's a multi-class classification. Here we only have two classes, either a paramagnet or a ferromagnet. Okay, so we will do this. So just to give you an example, X could be something that looks like that. We only have few spin ups. So an empty array would correspond to spin down, and an array that's full would correspond to spin up. So in that case, this configuration looks like more ordered because majority of spins are spin down, so this is more ordered. So in that case, the label has to be equal to zero, and that's the ferromagnetic phase. And if the configuration looks like this, which is more disordered, then naturally we should give 1, which corresponds to the paramagnetic phase. Okay? So we will do that on the first homework. So we will learn more about this this task in this homework. And the last one, last example I want to highlight in the last 5 minutes is also related to the Eisen model, but now we want to learn the couplings. So here we assume that we know the couplings between spins, but in that example I wanted to show you that there's also interest in finding learning about the couplings of between the different spins. Maybe I could use that one. So let's assume in this other example that we're given a data set where again x are the spin configurations and y now are not the phases, but actually the label, the energies of each configuration. So those are energies. So we will do that on the on the second tutorial. Spin configuration. And here, this is a spin configuration. Okay, so let's assume that we have an experiment, for instance, that allows us to, for each configuration, to get the energy. And we want to get the Hamiltonian that describes the interactions between the spins in that system. So we want to find the interactions between the different spins. So the generic Hamiltonian that we would be interested in is the following one, where these couplings are unknown, okay? And we want to learn them. And these couplings are continuous, so this is kind of a regression task, not a classification task, okay? So the idea is to use the data set to determine these couplings Gij. So we will learn about how to do that in the second lecture, and in the tutorial next week, we will see how we can find these couplings using a technique called linear regression, and we will learn about that next lecture. Okay. And just to highlight the topic of the next lecture, so we will learn about one class of supervised learning algorithms. So this will actually focus on supervised learning, and we will learn about linear regression. And also about logistic regression. Okay. So hopefully these kind of preliminary tools will provide you with the preliminary playground so that we can learn about the more complicated approach, namely neural networks. So we'll start with these basics, and then after that we'll move on to tools like feedforward neural networks or convolutional neural networks and things like that. Okay, I think we're good on time, so it was great to see you today, and look forward to interacting with you in the next lectures. Thank you. Yeah, you have any questions? Yeah.
Just want to point out we've got a tutorial this afternoon.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me. So the tutorial is this afternoon, and it will be about Python. So I know some of you are already familiar with Python. So what I thought would be good to, and also some of you are not familiar with Python, so it was kind of a dilemma. So what I thought would be good to do is to provide the people who don't have a background in Python with an introduction to Python so that they can learn about the basics that will be useful for the next weeks. And then for those who are advanced in Python, there are advanced questions at the end of that tutorial, which you can aim during that time, okay? So hopefully everyone will be busy during the tutorial. Okay? So see you today. Yeah, thank you.